Okay, recording started. So we were on Chof Aleph Amud Aleph. I think we got down about a third of the way down, but I'm going to go a few lines before. I'm going to go sort of about four or five lines from the top. Or actually, maybe let's go right from the top, and we'll just do it very quickly, because all of this is linked to the opinion of Rav Huna, and that's the hopefully a helpful place to start. So let's start with the first line, Chof Aleph Amud Aleph 21a. And that will lead us in, and then we'll wrap up this sugi. About halfway down, we'll switch back into to the other things that we'd been talking about regarding an animal who ate the fruit and things like that. Okay, Shalach le Rabbi Abba bar Zavda. So he sent the following question. Again, this is still a little bit in the middle, picking up at the same question of basically Hadar. Well, we'll spell out the question. He said as follows: Lamari bar Mar. He sent this question to Mari bar Mar. Ba'ami nei Rav Huna. He said to him, ask Rav Huna the following question: Hadar b'chotzer chaveri. This is the question we've been dealing with now for a little while in our Gemara. Somebody who lives in their friend's property, or not their friend, somebody else's property, shalom midaita, without the other person's knowledge. Tzorich lahalos lo schar or lo? Do they need to pay them or not? So again, the question is b'diavad, once it's already happened, right? Not are they allowed to live on the property, but once they've lived on the property, do they need to pay them or not? Adahochi, before he had the chance to ask, noch nafshe de Rav Huna. So Rav Huna passed away. So Rav Huna never got to answer the question. But Omale Rabba bar Rav Huna, Rabba the son of Rav Huna, said as follows: Hochi Omar Abba Murray, this is what my father, my teacher, Avi Murray, this is what he said. This is what he mishmeid the Rav in the name of Rav. And again, this is because we already had Omar Rav Huna Omar Rav earlier in our Gemara. So Rav Huna had said something in the name of Rav, and this is now his Rav Huna's son quoting that in his name. Eino tzarech lahalos lo schar. He does not need to pay him back. And because that was the background, but because of that, we used as a little bit of a springboard to ask a related question, based on a teaching of Rav Huna. So this is where I wanted to. This is where I think we should pick up from. V'hasocher, because I think we did start it last time, but I think it was a little bit unclear and we left it a little bit in the middle. So v'hasocher bayis meruven, somebody who rents a property from Reuven, ma'ale sechar leShimon, they pay back Shimon. They pay the rental value to Shimon. Why? Bit of a strange Gemara, strange teaching. So the Gemara clarifies: Shimon ma'avite. Well, what does Shimon have to do with anything? What did he do? So hachi kamar. This is what it means: nimtza habayis shel Shimon ma'ale lo sechar. Let's say you discover that the property belonged to Shimon, then that's who you pay back. Ma'ale lo sechar. So we've had. So relatively obvious. Somebody who rents a property from Reuven. They think they're renting it from Reuven, but actually it turns out it doesn't belong to Reuven. Unclear whether Reuven's doing this deviously or not at the moment, but either way, the point is that it clearly belongs to Shimon. So you're paying back. You're going to pay the. We're going to pay Shimon. So Tarte, from this we want to learn two things: Ha de kaima la agra, ha de lo kaima la agra. So, we learned two things. These two teachings of Rav Huna, i.e., the first one, Eina tzorech lahalos lo schar, right? If you live in your friend's property or live in somebody else's property without permission, then you don't need to pay them back. That was teaching number one of Rav Huna. And now the second teaching, that if you rent a property mistakenly from Reuven, that you have to pay back Shimon, the real owner. So they're talking about two different. Well, they seem to be contradicting each other, right? It's seemingly, potentially contradicting each other. So we explain, i.e., why do you need to pay back Shimon at all, right? If Shimon wasn't aware of it, let's spell out the question. But maybe it's not. Why? Let's put it like this. You rent the property, you think you're renting it from Reuven, right? Turns out Reuven's not the real owner.
No, I mean, the first case, you're on Reuven's land. And he doesn't know.
So that's what the Gemara is talking about. That's what the Gemara has termed zenen of ezelo choser. Reuven's not actually losing out, and therefore, do you need to pay him back? Why is he losing out?
He doesn't know he's losing out, but he is. Because he doesn't know, doesn't hurt.
No, he doesn't know he's losing out. He's not losing out. That's what the Gemara. Why would he be losing out?
Is that the rishut? Anybody who's somebody who's the rishut, that scares him.
That's not what the Gemara is saying. I mean, this is, well, let me put it like this. It might be It might be a form of gezel. In the Shulchan Aruch, it appears in the laws of gezel. It might be a form of gezel in terms of the attitude and the person doing it, maybe. But in terms of actual ability to claim back money, the what the Gemara says. No, you have a proof. Let's use Phil's case from earlier. Okay, you turn up after 3 months you've been away, and you've got video evidence that this fellow's been parking in your parking space for the last 3 months while you've been away. Right. So now. Should have whether he should or should not have done it, it's a different discussion. Like we said, Tosfot says he should not have done it. In that sense, maybe you're right. There is an element of gezel here, potentially. Okay, so as I say, the Shulchan Aruch is categorizing this in the laws of gezel, as does the Rambam. But now the question is, can you bring them a bill? Right. So according to the opinion of Rav Huna, and that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskens, you can't bring them a bill because again, you didn't lose out as a result. Right, so you can't lose. So that was teaching number one. That was case number one. But then we had another teaching of Rav Huna as follows: I rented a property from Reuven in good faith. Right, I thought that I was going to rent it from Reuven. It comes payday, right, and I discover that actually the I've been living there for a month. I'm going to now pay my month's rent. I realize it belongs to Shimon. So Reuven calls me up. I say, no, you're definitely not getting the money. But then the question is, do I now have to pay Shimon or not? So Rav Huna says yes, right? Which at first glance sounds very logical. But actually, if you base it on what we just said earlier, you were living in Shimon's property without Shimon's knowledge. We should say Hadar, we should fall back on the same thing, right? Zen and Avizel Choser. Shimon wasn't renting it out anyway. I lived there without paying. I didn't mean to, so again, maybe I didn't do anything wrong. But I shouldn't have to pay. Yet Rav Huna says you do have to pay. So the Gemara clarifies. Tarate, these two different two cases are different. Ha de kaimala agra, ha de lo kaimala agra. So one is where it would have been rented out, and one is where it would not have been rented out. So, one is where he is losing out, he is chaser, and the other one is where he's lo chaser, right? You don't have to pay if the person was lo chaser. But if he was looking for renters, Shimon's looking around for renters, and actually all the renters are going to other properties because they realize that there's smoke coming from the chimney, someone's living here already, so no one actually tries to rent this property, so then Shimon has lost out. So then that's why you have to pay Shimon back, and that's what Rav Huna's teaching, okay? Hard to kaimal agra, hard to low kaimal agra. So we've not a technicality, but the facts are different, okay? That's why you pay in one case and you don't pay in the other case. Omar of Schora bar Rav Huna, and again, this is continuing in a similar theme, and then we'll pause for thought maybe after this. The next couple of lines: Omar of Schora, Omar Rav Huna, Hadar bechotzer chaver shalom midaita, one who lives in another's property without their knowledge. Ein tzarach lahalos leschar. Again, same thing. So the Gemara is now bringing two further reasons why that's the case. Up until now, I think we quoted about midas lo. Maybe we didn't quote that. That might not have been our Gemara. I think that might have been a different Gemara. So we didn't really explain why until now. So the Gemara suggests two reasons why you don't have to pay. Zenen v'zeh lechoser. When you benefit and the other person doesn't lose out. So reason number one, and we'll explain each one and discuss them. Why mishum she'ne'emar? Based on the verse. The verse says, Usha'iyo yukas sha'ar. So this is a verse from Isaiah, which is talking about more, I don't know what you call it, magical, kabbalistic things. She'iyo is a type of demon, right? Some sort of, I don't know, mystical creature which causes problems on empty houses, right? So she'iyo yukas sha'ar, she'iyo is the name of this demon, and it's going to damage the gates, right? I.e., it's going to come in at the gates and cause damage to a property that is empty. Omar Mar Baravashi, Ledidi Chazili, Umenagach Kitura. So Baravashi says, oh no, I've been damaged by this, but damages in the same way as a shor. I'm not sure what the, I don't know if that, anyway, let's leave that line for now. We'll see if that helps us another time. But for now, the point is that's reason number one. Reason number one is there's some sort of, mystical demon, and we'll discuss that in just a moment, which causes damage to an empty property, and therefore, the fact that the property was not empty, right, seems to be of some benefit to the owner, and therefore you don't have to pay. Rav Yosef says as follows, Besa miyatva Yosef, so let's say a lived-in house, Yosef will be better on, right? We'll be better off. We'll have, when somebody lives there, it means that when there's a crack that appears in the wall, that actually they fill it in, right? We have, there are some better renters than others, but a lot of the time you have somebody who's living there, right, who takes pride in what they have, so they'll sort stuff out, right? The little chip over here, they sort it out. The sink gets blocked, they'll unblock it, you know, all that sort of stuff. So a lived-in house is better off. My Benai, who, what's the difference between these two reasons? Well, the Gemara quotes two different reasons. One was more this demon type reason, the other one was that the person actually sorts it out themselves. Ika Benai, who, there is a difference. The Komishtam, if you're using this property just for storage, tivna is straw, right? Hay, like teven, and tsive, I can't remember what tsive is, but some sort of wood. Oh, there you go. Okay, so yeah, so it's basically you're using it for storage, and you're not actually going inside this property. You're not living there, rather. So maybe that's the difference between the two. The Mepharshim clarified that, again, according to the first reasoning, that would still work, right? It's still used, and therefore this demon-like creature is not going to cause problems. But you don't have the same pride. If you're not living there, then you're not necessarily going to fix every tiny thing that goes wrong. And since you're not fixing it, then that's a problem. That doesn't... One more time.
So what we seem to be talking about the condition, whether it's occupied or not occupied. What's that got to do with anything?
Yeah, so
if it's owned by me, I can use it or not use it. But at the end of the day, if I could rent it out, whatever condition it's in, it has vanity.
Right, okay, so very good. So what we seem to be talking about, let me rephrase what I think is the question, and I think it's the question the Rashba asked, which is we're dealing in a case now where the person was not renting it out, right? We're talking about lo choser, that we feel that the renter is not, that the owner is not losing out, and that's why the person who lived there does not have to pay. Now, up until now, the whole time in the Gemara, we've been referring to that as lo choser, that you're not losing out. If it's lo choser, then... What is this reasoning, right? It sounds like you need to. It's not just lo choser. It needs to be to the benefit of the owner. So the Rashba says.
The other side of the coin is if someone's squatting there and not upkeeping it, possibly damaging it, then he is losing it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's basically what the Rashba answers. The Rashba says as follows, that whenever someone lives in the house, if they're not, you know, a lived-in house. A house, maybe you could say the same thing with a car, okay? You know, a car that's not used, right? Now, when you use a car, there's normal wear and tear to a use of a car, right? It's hard to quantify the wear and tear, but the more it's used, right, there's more mileage, the engine, you know, there is wear and tear. But the flip side of that is that a non-used car also doesn't do very well, right? When it sits in the garage for a long time, you try to turn it on, the batteries run out, actually things might have started to rust or whatever they might be. So there's a little bit of balance. That's what the Rashba says. The Rashba says that basically what we're doing is we're pointing out the balance, that there's no such thing as living in a house without normal wear and tear. Every time you open the window, right, then, and we've pointed this out, I think, in the past, that every time you open the window, I don't know how many uses a window handle gets, but in a sense you've used up one more of those uses, right? There's normal, I don't know, at some point the window handle's going to start to creak, and the more it's open, presumably it's going to start to do that more and more. So every time they open the window, that's a little bit of wear and tear. But the point is that's balanced, on the flip side, by the fact that a lived-in house also will be better off as well. So I think that's what the Rashba says the Gemara is trying to do here. It's trying to point out that the lo choser is an approximate lo choser, like you're saying. You know, it means that they're not losing out because on balance, yeah, there might be a bit of wear and tear, but there's also a little bit of benefit also. And it's, again, both of them seem to be relatively low level, and therefore we're referring to that as lo choser. That clear? I think that's what the Rashba says. Okay, so that's fine. So that's really been Rav Huna, which we've talked about. We talked about it, you know, much more at length about the halacha of Zenen of Zelo Choser. So I'm not going to go into detail on that again, but it has helped for me. I think at least this Gemara helps to clarify a couple of things, and just to point out. Yeah, I don't know if we need to spend a long time. Okay, whenever the Gemara talks about demons and these sorts of ideas, obviously differing opinions in our sages as to what exactly that means, whether how metaphorical it's supposed to be. But certainly everybody seems to agree that that whatever potentially magical things might have existed, that seemed to be linked to an age where, again, you had much more open miracles from God as well. So the two were balanced out, right? You had in a sense prophets, right, who were speaking to God directly, legitimate prophets, and therefore you had open miracle. I mean, I guess take it right back to Egypt. You had open miracles that Moses was doing, right, that Moshe was doing on behalf of the Almighty. So in a sense, to balance that out, to allow for free will and people to be skeptical, you had Egyptians who were able to do some sort of magic and some sort of approximate magic, and therefore it wasn't so obvious that God was running the show. But now we live in a world without either of those things. That certainly seems to be the approach of many. But then the Gemara does have a number of times where it talks about these sorts of demonic and magical and mystical types of things. Okay, Hahu Gavra. And that's all right. Yeah, so we're almost exactly halfway down the page where there's the little cluster of Tosfot. We're sort of around there, right in the middle of the page. Hahu Gavra, second to last, the last two words on the line. Hahu Gavra Debona Apadno, Akilkilta. So they lived, they built a mansion, right? Sounds like a very fancy house, very nice house. On this Kilkata de Yasme, effectively a rubbish dump, or some sort of not very well used, pretty desolate and basically a tip, that belonged to Yusomim, belonged to orphans. What's the relevance of it belonging to orphans? So we'll see in just a moment. Basically, when it belongs to orphans, then it's going to have a bet din, or some sort of appointed body who's going to be looking after it, right? They're not able to take care of it themselves, and therefore somebody else is going to be in charge of it. In this case, it's Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman seems to be the person who's in charge. He's looking after it on their behalf. And Agbe Rav Nachman la'apadne mine, he seized the property. He seized this mansion, this very nice house, seemingly in payment for their living on the land. The fact that they lived on the land meant that they owed rent. Now, they built this very nice house there. They hadn't paid rent. And since they didn't pay rent, the house was seized as payment for the lack of rent. Now, the Gemara asks, does that mean Lema Kosova Rav Nachman? Does that mean that Rav Nachman holds Hadar b'chotzer chavir shalom idaita? If you live in somebody else's property without them knowing, Tzorich lehalos loschar, against Rav Huna, right? Sounds like you do have to pay if you live there without their knowledge, right? Because he's seized rent, or the equivalent of rent, as a result. So no, they say, Hahume ikara karmanoi havu dairibe. No, this was different, because there weren't other people living there. There were people who were paying rent. Now, you said it was a rubbish dump. Okay, but some people choose some sort of karmanoi. I think Rashi explains that he changes it to Kadmonai, which means the earlier people, whoever it was. There's some people who were living there initially, and therefore it is Kaima La'agra. It would have been rentable, right? It was something that they were hoping to rent out and gain money from, and therefore V'yahavilu Yasmi Dovar Muot. They were paying a small amount at least, and therefore that's what. Therefore, they should have been paying. And not only that, Rav Nachman had offered them zil paisin hu leyasme. He told them to go and pay. He told now the person who had built this this very nice mansion, this very nice house on there, he told him to go and pay the Yosemite, to pay the orphans below Ashgach, and he didn't do it. And that's why Agbe Rav Nachman la apadne mine, that's why he seized the house as the equivalent of rent. So again, this is not a proof that he disagrees. Sounds like if they would have been doing it without their knowledge, then maybe it would have been okay. But again, or not okay, but you wouldn't have been able to claim the money back.
Is God not saying they had to visit the orphans or whatever to actually buy the land rather than pay the rent?
No, I think he's saying you have to pay the rent, no? Why buy the land?
They effectively then appropriate the land to build a property.
Correct.
So what they should be doing is they should be paying for the value of the land on which the mansion was built.
No, they're not living there anymore. They've been kicked out. But in addition to being...
But I'm saying that the reason that he took the mansion was because they wouldn't pay the rent. Was it they wouldn't pay the rent?
Yeah.
They wouldn't buy the land so they could build the place.
I think it means so they wouldn't pay the rent.
But that doesn't make sense, does it? Because they're not going to pay rental every year for a
property. No, but that's what they were losing out, because beforehand the orphans have been receiving a rent. So what have they lost when the man boots the people off and builds a house there? The orphans lose the rent.
Well, they don't just lose the rent.
They've got the land back. It was rent from while they were there.
But they haven't got the land back because the guy's appropriated by owning property on it.
But now they've taken it back. He's not there.
Now they have, because he wouldn't pay anything.
Because he wouldn't pay rent.
So he still owes the rent.
He was there for 5 years. And now he's not there anymore.
Yeah.
So over those 5 years, that the he owes the money for those 5 years.
How do you learn that he's not living there anymore?
Well, not from confiscation.
No. He confiscated because he didn't pay.
Well, let's put it like this.
He's moved out of the mansion.
Again, but this is like any Gemara. The Gemara is leaving out details that are relative. Yeah, but it's pretty clear that's what he's doing. Otherwise, let's put it like this. You can't... But it doesn't make it clear whether he does or he doesn't. Which one is the easy... Which one causes a question to you if he stayed on the land? It's problematic if he stays on the land, correct? That causes us a question.
Yeah.
Right, so therefore he didn't. And therefore we don't have the question.
No, but you don't have a question because Ram Nachman effectively evicted him from the land.
No, what so the sequence goes like this. People are living on the land and paying a rent to the orphans.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Then they're no longer on the land.
Yeah.
Because someone's built a house on the land.
Correct.
The orphans are no longer receiving a rent.
Yeah.
Rav Nachman says, you know what, if you want to stay there, you pay rent to the orphans. He doesn't pay the rent to the orphans, says, you know what? Go away. The house is mine because you haven't paid the rent.
Right.
It's as simple as that. Why make it difficult?
Because quite clearly, he hasn't rented the land to build the house or bought the land to build the house. He's just built the house.
Exactly, which is why it's been seized, because he owes the money.
He's just built the house. In other words, he's appropriated the property of the orphans, which was vacated by the people who weren't living there.
So having moved
and
out,
therefore
he's lost the land, he's lost the house, and he owes money.
And the orphans are to the good, because maybe the value of the house is more than the rent that you
right.
have.
So,
I don't have a problem with that, but what I'm saying is they're different in kind. This is not a question of rental going forward.
No, not going forward, going back.
It's a lost opportunity because he built the property. But the orphans have lost out for all time in the future.
No. They've got the land back with the house on it.
Yeah, they have now, because that was the remedial action taken.
Well, that's the point.
It sounds like you've created a legal category which I'm not following. This is not a Talmudic. You're talking about a legal. I've never heard of. You're trying to talk about what happens from here until.
All we know from these facts is orphans had land. People sometimes rented it. They disappeared. Then a certain individual came along, built a mansion on that land,
and didn't pay rent.
And he didn't pay anything. You don't pay. Why would you pay rent if you built a house? Unless the house is built, you're paying rent to the person who owns the house.
Well, the building is.
Yeah, you're renting
it. But we haven't got that.
But that's what that is. That's what this is. What do you mean? That's exactly what this is.
Exactly the case.
Yeah, I don't. I feel like. Well, let's talk about it after. See, I'm not following the. That's exactly what we're describing here. It's exactly what we're describing. Okay, so. So the bottom line is that, again, from all these things, the Gemara seems to be pushing us a little bit in direction. Certainly that's the way many Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch seem to read it, pushing us in the direction. Zen and Rishon Lechoser, the bottom line is, Ein Tzarech Lahalos Leschar, you don't need to pay back. And that's how we pass again. There's no payment for that. Again, in all these cases, you could argue what is called Lechoser and what's not called Lechoser. We've seen there's always going to be a little bit of ambiguity there, and I guess that's what a Bet Din would have to decide. But in principle, that's the halach. Ketzad. Okay, so now we're back in the Mishnah, or back quoting a line from the Mishnah. Again, to remind ourselves, we're talking about Shein damages now. An animal eats something that doesn't belong to them. Shein Birishus HaRabim, generally, is what we're talking about. Shein Birishus HaYochid in a private property is going to be exempt. Is going to be exempt again because that's part of the understanding of coming onto the property. So we're generally talking about on public land. Excuse me, the other way around. Talking about on private land because in public land the assumption is that the food should not have been sitting there, right? Which is again what we're going to discuss now, and therefore. You pay back what the animal benefited, right? And we had a discussion how much exactly that was worth, right? What type of food? How much? How do we value that? We value the amount based on what the owner would have had to pay to feed their animal with the simple straw or simple barley and stuff like that. Anyway, that was the previous Gemara. Now we're on to a different element of this Mishnah. Omar Rav. Rav says as follows. Uvim Echazeres, right? We're talking about basically where it turns its head a little bit, right? Uvim Echazeres is Rosha. Rashi says Uvim Echazeres Rosha Mirechova. It turns its head. The Rashi is basically halfway down the page. Omer Rav Uvim Echazeres Rosha Mirechova Letzida Shel Rechova. It's not quite in private property, but it has sort of moved itself away from the standard path on the road, v'ochloperus, and eat the fruit. Katani mas nisin, dimshalemes mashizika, afal gav de kula kaima berechova. Even though it's all still part of the street, it's a little bit, it's basically sort of moved away. Shmuel amar afilu bimchazeres nami. So this is the debate between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, if it moves out of the, you know, the, let's say there's a wide open road, and the food is basically sort of to the side of that road, you know, very much like on the edge of the person's property. I think from this it sounds like it is still in Rishus HaRabim. We call it Tzidei Rishus HaRabim maybe, or the sides of the Rishus HaRabim, something along those lines. But Shmuel's basically saying, Rav, let's start with Rav. Rav is saying that you would be you'd be liable. Okay, uvim mechazeres, that's what it's talking about. Mishalemes mashenenes. Shmuel says no. Afilu mechazeres nami potter. Even if it turns its head away, it's still exempt. I in a rishus harabim. Will Shmuel heichi mashkachas lo demechayev? Why? How is it possible that a person is liable according to Shmuel? Kagon deshavkata lirchova. When the animal left the path entirely for ozlova kama, right? And Betzidei Rechova, right, where Odlav Akoma, where it sort of went more deliberately and went to eat it, rather than just simply turning its head, right? Turning its head in order to eat something on the edge of the road, that's not enough, according to Shmuel, but according to Rav, that is. According to Rav, that would be enough to make you liable. Okay. Demasni laha shmaita ba'ape nafshi. Some people teach this separately, right? That this is not based on the Mishnah, which is how we presented it as almost like a commentary on our Mishnah. Rav and Shmuel are explaining the language of our Mishnah, but other people present this no as an entirely separate discussion with the same bottom line. Mechazeres, if an animal turns its head and eats from the edge of the Rishus HaRabim, then Rav Omar Chayeves, Rav says you're liable. Shmuel Amar Patura, Shmuel says you are exempt. Very interesting, I never noticed this before, but we've had a discussion in the past. Okay, I don't know how much you read into this, but maybe for another time, when we have a little bit more time. It's interesting to note the gender distinctions over here. Before we were talking about Potter and Chayev, which sounds like talking about, which I would standardly say we're talking about the owner, because when we use the average owner, we're always talking in the masculine. The Baal is usually in the masculine, whereas when we say Petura and Chayeves, it almost sounds like the behema, which is the animal. Might be the, I don't know if that's I don't know if that anyone talks about whether that's notable or anything to discuss. But I just noticed that as we're talking, so I guess I just thought I'd mention it. Either way. volition. And we've talked in the past, actually, about all these types of things, whether how you view it. You know, that you can view the liability over here as, in a sense, the animal is liable, right? But the animal can't pay, and therefore the owner is footing the bill for the animal's liability. Or you say, no, the owner is liable. You know, so there are different ways to present. So I wonder if that is significant in that regard. Anyway. V'lishmuel, and according to Shmuel, Meshalemesh Masha Hizika, when it says Meshalemesh Masha Hizika, when it says you pay what you damage, Heichi Mashkachas Lo Dimechaiva, how exactly is it possible to be liable for that? Kagunda Shavka L'Rechava V'Ozla V'Koma B'Tzidei Rechava, again, same thing as we said before, that where it went out of its way much stronger to go and eat. So again, just to be here, actually, we should explain it from the Mishnah itself. Let's just double check the language of the Mishnah. Yeah, so maybe it's worth turning back to the Mishnah. Actually, we should have done this before. But Mishnah is on Yud Tet Amud Bet 19b. And this is what the Mishnah had said. So the Mishnah was talking about that Shane is Potter, is Potter is exempt b'rishus ha-yachid, in the private domain. Sorry, in the public domain, b'rishus ha-rabim Potter. It's exempt. This is halfway through the Mishnah. Ketzad mishalemes mashenenes ochlo mintoch harachova mishalemes mashenenes. If it eats from within the one second, let's just look up over here. What do we have over here? Kinshan Shanajanis. Yeah, so again, so this is within the marketplace, some sort of marketplace. And if the animal eats over there, then Mishalemes Masha Nehnes. Then you pay what the animal benefited from, which is a different amount. Two. Sorry, I've lost my place in the Mishnah. Yes. Keitza Meshalemes Masha Nehnes. How do you pay what you benefited from? Mitzorcha Rechov Meshalemes Masha Nehnes. If it ate from within this marketplace, then you pay what you what it benefited from. Mitzidei HaRechova, but if it was from the edges of the marketplace, Meshalemes Masha Hizika, then it pays what it damaged. I.e., let's say it ate some very expensive mangoes, for example, right? Very expensive, fancy mangoes the animal ate, right? So the difference is, where did it eat it? If it ate it from a certain place, then you pay what you benefited, i.e. what the animal benefited. We've already seen that Gemara. The Gemara said that you determine what the animal benefited based on what you, or what you as the owner benefited, I guess, what you would have avoided paying for their next meal. You would usually have spent, I don't know, £10, you know, on a bit of barley it probably sounds like an expensive lunch actually for an animal, but whatever the amount is, you'd have spent X amount on paying them, and on feeding them that meal. Now you don't have to because they've eaten these fancy mangoes. But actually, Meshalemes Masha Hizika, if you're talking about paying what they've damaged, then that's a much higher price. It's, you know, these mangoes cost £50, so that's so that if they eat it from a slightly different place, that is Meshalemes Masha Hizika. That's where you're paying what you damaged. So that's what that's what our Gemara is talking about. So Rav and Shmuel, we probably should have, as I said, seen that Mishnah earlier. Rav and Shmuel, we've seen this debate now twice, whether it's a commentary on our Mishnah or whether it's a separate discussion in and of itself. But either way, Shmuel is of the opinion that Vimechazeres, where the animal simply turns its head, that's enough to make it liable, fully liable, right? I.e., Meshalemes Masha Hizika. Oh no, sorry. Yeah, correct. That's Rav's opinion, right? Rav's opinion is where it turns its head, that's enough to make it liable. Shmuel's opinion, no. Where it turns its head, you're still exempt. And therefore Shmuel says, what does it mean? It means the shav kol erchov. It means it has to actually go out of this marketplace. You know, really leave it, walk out of its way, for ozlev akoma, and literally means to go and to stand up. And then once it eats on that very edge, then that's when it's going to be liable, Masha Hizika. That's when it's going to be liable the full amount. Okay, so that's this debate between Rav and Shmuel. Mosif, we have a question. Okay, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak has the following question. Mipesach hachanus Meshalemis mashanenes. That was again the next line in the Mishnah. Okay, the next line in the Mishnah says if you ate it from the entrance to the shop, then you pay what it you pay meshalemis mashanenes, what you benefited. But mitocha chanus, if you eat from within the shop, if the animal eats from within the shop, then you pay masha hizika. Right, what was damaged. Okay, so again, slight difference over here in the location of what it ate. Mipesach hachanus, meshalemis mashanenes, heichi mashgachas lo. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok wants to ask, this is based on, this is a question on Rav's opinion. Okay, Rav who said that turning it to your head is enough to make you fully liable. We see that if you eat from the entrance to the shop, then you still only pay mashanenes, so only what you benefited. How is that possible? Pshita, he says, b'mechazeres. Clearly, that must be talking about where the animal simply turned its head. V'ka'omar mar, or whether you take that word out or not, v'ka'omar, and we said, mashanenes, and yet you still pay only what you benefited. This seems to be against the opinion of Rav. Mashanenes, in what you benefited, that's how much you pay. Mashahizik, lo, but the full amount of what they damaged, you don't pay. So no, we say, hu mosiv lo, v'hu mefarek lo. So, for Rav Nachman, this was a question, but he also answered this question. Dekaimo bekeren zavis, he says, this is where the shop itself was in a corner. Okay, the shop was in a corner, and this is where Rashi has his helpful diagram. You can see the diagram within the Rashi over there, where you have this. So you have this little road, and it's opening out into a larger area, right? The road is opening out into a larger area, and the shop is on that corner, just before it opens out into a larger area. So I think the point is as follows, that you, because it's opening out into a larger area, the animal is automatically going nearer the shop, right? Usually for an animal, according to Rav, usually turning its head is significant enough. But over here, because the animal is in a sense, is might be going out into the larger area, is going to be coming closer to the shop than normal. And therefore, I think that's what it's saying, therefore turning its head, even according to Rav, would be exempt. Right? Turning, or not exempt, you'd be paying mashanenes, you'd only be paying the value of what it ate, or the value of what you benefited, rather than the full value of what it actually ate and how much it damaged.
Rabbi, isn't the presumably the value of the benefit to the animal in a sort of stable economy is going to be the market price of whatever it is he ate?
No, like we said before, if he ate fruit, for example, this is what the Gemara.
Let me make my point.
Okay.
The real difference here is that between eating things that it would normally eat and damaging or eating things that it wouldn't normally eat.
Okay.
And because you can't say in that situation, for example, if it ate something that was bad for it, that
so we had that earlier.
It
yeah.
has any benefit.
Okay.
To the animal. And that's why if it's actually on the private land of the shopkeeper. Inside the shop, it doesn't matter whether the animal benefited. You've got to pay damages for what the animal has taken, irrespective of the benefit to the animal. Because what does it really mean, the difference between the benefit to the animal when it's eating something it would normally have eaten but it hasn't paid for it?
So I think the assumption here is that we're talking about the assumption here is that animal food is the cheapest food, basically the cheapest type of edible thing. That all the animal feed is going to be cheaper, and therefore the likelihood is that anything else it's eating from that is edible is going to be at least that price, if not more expensive.
I see. Okay.
That's my sense. So which is probably bought. I guess you could probably buy quite fancy animal food nowadays. But it's probably a relatively fair assumption that if it's walking past, I don't know. It's walking past the entrance to Mutsuyan as it's going, then it's going to end up. That's much more than what you would have spent on your.
You think there'd be a difference?
I think that's what it's. I think that's what the assumption of the Gemara is here. And again, we saw earlier that this barley, you know, barley feed is sort of relatively low level. Yeah, relatively low level amounts. Again, if it's eating something which is bad for it. Then that might be a different thing altogether. That might be falling under, rather than shein damages, that might be falling under keren damages, because because the assumption of the Gemara is that an animal knows what's good for it and what's bad for it to an extent, and therefore it's causing that damage for the sake of causing damage, right? If it eats if it eats from a chair or something, you know, which is bad for it, or you know, part of the furniture, then it's doing that to cause damage, not to. It's not shame damage. It's just falling into a different category. That's what the Gemara seemed to imply.
Are you saying that the difference between eating from the door of the shop and eating from inside the shop is to do with the quality of the food it's eating?
No, it's a different. What we're told is a different measure of damages.
Yeah, but I was assuming that it was because eating from within the shop means the animal deliberately did something unusual, whereas eating from outside.
No, I think it's a difference.
More the course of normal events. Like passing by.
You could be right, but I think that it's a difference between eating on the in the Rishus HaRav and taking something from private property.
Yes,
but again, if it's fully in the Rishus HaRav, everybody agrees you'd be exempt totally. If the owner of the food had left a big bucket of apples in the middle of the street, then fair game. Sounds like.
What about these great grocery stores that have stuff outside?
Well, that's I think this is the scenario.
I guess I'm saying that on the price might be the same inside and outside, not the same apple.
Correct.
I'm not sure I understood David. I guess what I'm saying is that on balance, eating from outside the shop is essentially
But it's not the Rishat HaRabim because you're liable at all. It's the in between. That's what we're saying. That's why you're paying what you benefited, but not the full amount of the food. It's a little bit in between, because again, you're not fully exempt, but you're not paying the full level of damages easily. Exactly. If the animal goes in. So that's the difference. Right, so that's the difference. Case of Mishalemus Mashanenes, that's what you're paying back. Okay? And yeah, I think Shlomo's point is right, that we're talking about, you know, for us, it's less common now to walk past food shops and have the food sitting outside. I guess fruit shops still have it.
Fruit
and vegetable shops. But I'm saying we're talking about a place, again, most of this is talking about marketplaces, right? Market, it means, and the animals are also, it's normal to have animals walking up and down it, right? Normal. Yes.
Bridge rolls.
Yeah. Because I haven't seen any bridge rolls out there. I thought we were talking about what's the food that's sitting out on the street.
On the left-hand side, as you go up, there's a do-it-yourself store or something there, and you have stuff outside.
Right. Right.
Buckets and all types of stuff.
Yes.
Somebody goes past. Not an animal, person. It's on his butt, and
isn't
paying attention. Knocks the stuff over.
Yes. That's the second half of our comment. We're dealing with human damages. My limited memory of those Gemaras is that yes, you would be very much liable because, again, the level of human. The culpability of a human being for themselves is much higher than it is for their animal, right? For your animal, there's always an implicit assumption that an animal is going to, you know, that you have to sort of allow for a little bit more movement. You can't keep it totally under control every second, and therefore, if it's walking down the road, well, we saw. I don't know if anyone watched the ceremony, the processions, right? So that's what happens. It's normal. Yeah, exactly. So you know, so sometimes that happens with animals. So again, so let's say it would have caused damage as a result of that. So it depends a little bit probably on how on the level, you know. So as I say, it's never exact. Whereas a human being, yeah, the assumption is that you do very much, watch where you're going. But unless you make the counter argument, which is which is another category of damages that we haven't gone into in detail, but we saw it at least in our first Mishnah right at the beginning, which is bor b'rishus harabim, right? If you dig a pit in the middle of the street, right, then you're liable for the damage that causes. So if, for example, the fruit seller shouldn't have been putting their basket there, right, they left the basket in the middle, then potentially you could argue it's a bor b'rishus harabim. Not only would the cyclist not be liable, you might be liable for the damage caused to the bike or to the cyclist, right? So that was we'll get to those Gemaras a little bit later. We'll call you back when we get to those ones. Yeah. Okay. Okay, let's find a good... Oh, it's, yeah, we've got 5 minutes, so let's see if we can find a good place. Okay. So this is the Kama Bekeren Zovis. That was our... as we said, that was the Rashi was explaining. Rashi helped us understand. It's a nice little picture that Shmuel... This is Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak had asked the question and explained, and he said, within the opinion of Rav, Rav who'd said that turning the animal's head, the animal turning its head is enough to make it fully liable. What about the next stage of the Gemara that says that if you eat it from the entrance to the shop, then it's only half, you know, it's only this half level of paying back what it benefited. So he explains, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok says that's talking about where it's opening out to a larger, wider path, or a wider square, and the shop is on that corner. In fact, the shop is on that corner presumably means that the animal is going in a slightly different direction. Interesting, I see, I have on my Gemara a different drawing within the Hagos V'Tzionim. So again, others have a slightly different understanding. Does everyone have the second drawing as well? So one drawing is within Rashi where it's a straight path which is opening out into a square, and the other one is literally where it's on a corner. So again, as it's turning a corner, either one, I guess we could get into details there if we wanted to spend the time on what the difference is and why they have that debate. But either way, for now, let's keep going. Ikka de Omri. Okay, some say that actually you have the opposite way around, and we have this many times, the Tunkle who says what. We've had this round that Rav is saying you're liable and Shmuel is saying you're exempt, but actually we have over here Ikad Omri, Micha Zeres, Kule Amalo Pligi Dechai. Sorry, it's not the other way around. We have a slightly different reading of our Gemara. Mechazeres kulei amalo pligi dechayeves. When it turns its head, everybody agrees. Rav and Shmuel. Before we said Shmuel said you wouldn't pay full amount, but now we're saying Shmuel agrees with Rav. They both agree that with the animal turning its head, you were going to pay full amount. But ki pligi b'maktze mokam mirshuso lirshuso rabim. Where in a sense you sort of mark out an extra place. The opposite. Where he has basically, that land belongs to him, but he begins his property slightly further back. He gives a little bit more space to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, right? He gives a little bit of area to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. He doesn't build up until the edge of his property. When you look at the legal document, he actually owns, you know, 5 feet further than his property. But he's given a little bit more space to them, but he puts his food in there, right? He puts his stuff out there. So those 5 feet really do belong to him. It is private land, but it's not obviously so, I guess, unless you look at the documentation. But Makhtem Mokom Lirushus Rabim, he's giving from his property to the Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Itmar. And that is the debate. Omar Rav, Lo Shonu Elabim Chazeres. Rav says when an animal turns its head, that's where the problem is. Aval Makhtem Mokom Rishusar Lirushusar Rabim. But if you give from your Rishus to Rishusar Rabim, then it's Peturah, then it's exempt. Shmuel Omar Afilu, but Makhtem Mokom Rishusar Lirushusar Rabim. Chayeves. It's interesting because over here Shmuel seems to be more stringent. Right? Yeah. They seem to swap them around as well. Okay, that actually Shmuel says in that case that you would be liable, whereas Rav says you would be exempt. Okay. Lema babur birushuso kamifligi. Maybe they're talking about a bur birushuso. So we always talk about, in the classic case of a bur, of this pit, stumbling block, is, or this dangerous thing that you're leaving lying around, is in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, in public property. What about if you leave it in your private property? So generally we say Berbershus Hayachid is fine, right? If you're on my property, then you've got to be a bit careful where you're walking, right? I don't need to fill up every hole in my garden. If someone's walking in my garden, they need to look out where they're going. I'm not responsible for every hole in my garden, but I am responsible if I dig one in the public domain, because again, it's normal for people to walk there. But there is a slight difference. Berber Shusha Kamifligi, Rav Omar Potter, Rav says you're exempt if it's in your property. Kosovar Berber Shusha Chayev. Actually, we should clarify. So what is this case referring to? It's not a classic case of bur birshus. So it doesn't mean that you dug a hole in your back garden. What it means is as follows. Rashi explains. So let's just see this Rashi lema towards the bottom of the thin Rashi lines, about six lines from the end of that. Rav or Shmuel are discussing the following case. Bechofer bor b'rishusa, you dig a pit in your land, in the field. We're talking about a field now. Let's keep it simpler to understand than our gardens. But you've got a field, for example, you know, there's no fencing around it. And then v'hifkir b'rishusa, v'hifkir b'rishusa, v'lo hifkir bor. So actually, I dig this nice pit. I'm going to make some rainwater, I don't know, or something. And then I say, you know what, the rest of my land, I don't need the rest of it. I've dug this pit now, that's the only bit I want. The rest of it can be public property. I'm happy to make it for everybody. And everybody starts walking across the rest of this field. Now there's this pit in the middle. That part, I've held on to my ownership of that. I don't want to lose that. So there, that's what their debate is. Usually if you dig the pit and then you make the land Hefker, then you're required to fill in the pit. And that's the classic case of Berber Shusabe. But here you didn't. The land of the pit you've kept ownership of. But you have declared ownerless all the land around it. You've made that into public property. And therefore people are going to be walking around this pit. So there, that's this debate. Rav Omar Potter, Rav says, okay, but you're still exempt because you actually own this pit and therefore you're not liable. But Kosovar Berber Shuso Chayev. The Gemara is saying as follows, that actually it flips from case to case. Rav de Omar Potter, Rav who said you're exempt in our case, right? Rav who said, it's not really exempt, by the way. It's really that you're paying the, we'll call it half damages for now. You're paying what you've, what it benefited rather than full damages, but let's call it exempt for now to keep it simple. Rav said, but where we're talking about a case where you, let's spell it out. We said, you own the full property, but you've given a little bit of your land. You've given the last 5 feet to the public domain. And therefore, if you put your food in there, right, and the animal comes along to eat it, you're exempt, says Rav. Right? Rav says you'd be exempt. And the Gemara clarifies, Rav de Omar Potter, he says exempt in that case because he holds you liable in the Bur case. If I were to dig a pit in my land and then make the rest of it ownerless around it, I would be liable, i.e. the fact that you're giving over land as a kindness to the public domain does not exempt you from your responsibility. It doesn't make it, you're still held a bit responsible for that, and therefore you're exempt in this case because it's considered to be public property to an extent, and therefore you're going to be liable in the other case. But Shmuel d'Omer Chayev, Shmuel who says Chayev in our case, he said that you were liable in the animal who ate was liable in our case. Why? Because presumably Shmuel seems to view this as fully private. The fact that it's fully private means that the owner of the animal would be liable, and therefore since it's fully private, we extend that to the other case of the burr. This pit where you've left your 1 foot lip around the edge of the pit, and that you own that is fully private, and therefore you're exempt from that. But the Gemara rejects this. The Gemara says, Omar lecha Rav. Rav says as follows, Eimer lecha, turning over, Eimer lecha be'alma bur b'rishuso potter. He says, no, I don't, that's not fair. I do still hold that bur b'rishuso is exempt, v'shayni hocha. So he says, I wouldn't subscribe to that extreme position. V'shayni hocha, this case is different. The case where the owner gave a little bit of his storefront to the public domain. De Omar lav kol kaminoch de mikarat lehu lepei roseich. Right, you don't have the right to come for the fruit, to come so close for the fruit. Lerushas harabim umechayvet lehu letaroi. Right, therefore he's going to make you liable, your animal liable in this case. Well, Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says no. Be'alma bor b'rishuso chayev de bishlama bor. Usually you could say in my own property I had no idea, right? I had no idea that you're going to be wandering around, right? Because you're in my property. But elaperos, but for fruit, mi ikalameimar, right? You can't really say that. Lava daite, I didn't do it intentionally. Ha chazilehu, it was, in a sense, you would have seen that your animal is is doing that, and therefore you're going to be liable. So I'm worried that we've misread this actually as we go through it, because I'm worried that we switched over to a Boer case altogether. And then when we switched over, we say Lema Boer Bereshus Rabbi Kamivligi Tomarav Potter. Okay, maybe we might have to come back to this next time. It's clear that we're comparing between a Boer case and a Shane case. I'm just worried that we've actually switched over entirely to talk about an animal almost slipping on this, and therefore it's you're going to be slightly liable for that as well. But I didn't note that. I didn't know that switch. Okay, I think we'll have to finish off with it. Maybe we'll pick up with this next time. Okay, because I'm conscious of the time. Let's start off with this last bit, the Ikad Omri. Not the Ikad Omri. From where? Lema Boer. Okay. All right, so we'll start off with that next time. Okay, very good. Thank you.